The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Oh, absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Finding answers in the disappearance of a Saudi writer.
We should be able to get to the bottom fairly soon.
Plus, new election security concerns.
Officials do see that there have been attempts to access election networks this fall.
Later, the two burger chains with antibiotic-free beef.
Well, most of the rest got an F.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with missing Saudi writer Jamal Khashoggi. A staunch critic of the kingdom and contributor to the Washington Post, he was last seen at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul about 3 weeks ago.
We should be able to get to the bottom fairly soon.
On his way out west for campaign rallies, President Trump was asked if Jamal Khashoggi is dead.
It certainly looks that way to me. It's very sad.
The president said if Saudi Arabia is to blame, it will face consequences.
It'll have to be very severe. I mean, it's bad, bad stuff. But we'll see what happens.
Mr. Trump added he's waiting for the results of three different investigations before drawing conclusions.
We ought to give them a few more days.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo briefed President Trump at the White House after a trip to Saudi Arabia and Turkey. He said Saudi officials promised a transparent probe.
There are lots of stories out there about what has happened. We just are going to allow the process to move forward.
But the administration seems to be toughening its stance. On Thursday, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin announced he's ditching a financial summit in Riyadh. Writing on Twitter, after meeting with the president and Pompeo, we have decided I will not be participating. Mnuchin's withdrawal marks the first formal rebuke of the kingdom over the Khashoggi case, a contrast to Mr. Trump's recent comments praising Saudi Arabia as a key ally in countering Iran and ordering American-made weapons. On CBSN last year, Khashoggi warned the Trump administration's embrace of Saudi leadership could backfire.
Is it the Trump effect that felt that made Prince Mohammed bin Salman feel empowered to this impulsive behavior in foreign policy? It is dangerous. It is dangerous for Saudi Arabia, for the region.
Correspondent Weijia Jiang reporting. Meanwhile, the U.S. is investigating a deadly attack on coalition forces in Kandahar, Afghanistan. Here's correspondent Kimmy McCormick at the Pentagon.
The shooting happened after a security meeting. Afghan bodyguards opened fire, killing the Kandahar governor, the powerful police chief, and an intelligence official. General Scott Miller, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, had been at the meeting. He was not injured, but two Americans were wounded in the crossfire, and one coalition contractor was hurt. The Taliban have claimed responsibility.
Now to what's being called a caravan of Central American migrants making their way north, trying to cross into the U.S.
They wanted that caravan, and there are those that say that caravan didn't just happen.
At a rally in Missoula, Montana, the president accused Democrats without any evidence of supporting a caravan of about 3,000 migrants heading for the U.S. border.
The crazy Democrats refused to support any form of border security legislation.
In addition to this latest caravan, now at the Mexico-Guatemala border, a U.S. Border Patrol official tells CBS News there has been an increase in large groups attempting to cross into the U.S. together. On October 2nd, Border Patrol agents encountered a group of 164 adults and children near the border, and on September 25th, a group of 264 migrants.
As you know, I'm willing to send the military to defend our southern border if necessary.
But the president's promise won't be possible without first declaring a national emergency and getting a congressional waiver. The Mexican ambassador to the U.S., Geronimo Gutierrez, said Mexico has asked the United Nations to help Mexico review asylum claims from members of the caravan.
Chip Reed, CBS News, Phoenix, Arizona.
Immigration wasn't the only headline out of that Montana rally Thursday night. President Trump was criticized for praising Republican Congressman Greg Gianforte for assaulting a reporter.
Greg is smart. And by the way, never wrestle him. You understand that? Never.
Correspondent Stephen Portnoy is at the White House. The president's comments got the White House Correspondents Association responding. Stephen, what did that organization say?
Olivier Knox, the president of the Correspondents Association, issued a rare statement on the organization's behalf. He said that it amounts to the celebration of a crime, the cheerleading of a violent act. The president's defenders, however, say that he was clearly joking. At least that's how Steve Scalise, the House Majority Whip, put it in a series of tweets on Friday.
Stephen, the president made those comments in Montana out on the road campaigning for Republicans. He'll continue to do this up until the elections next month. How much do you think this midterm election will be about President Trump?
I think it'll be about the president to a significant extent. Either if you favor the president and you believe that he's kept his promises and he has been a good steward of the American economy, well, then I think that you're apt to vote for the Republican candidates on the ballot. If, however, you believe that the last year and a half has been a very difficult time for American society and American politics, then you may be more motivated than you otherwise would have been to vote in this midterm election cycle against Republicans and in favor of Democratic candidates. This election, to a significant extent, I think both sides expect it to be a referendum on the president. And in fact, Mr. Trump is actually going around campaigning, essentially making the case that it ought to be.
And finally, Stephen, as we get closer to November 6th, we're learning more about the threats to our own election security. What is that?
Well, a joint statement issued late Friday under the name of the intelligence community, the FBI, the Justice Department, warns of Russian, Chinese, and other countries like Iranian efforts to undermine confidence in democracy and to influence government policies. There's not a great deal new in this statement other than to say that officials do see that there have been attempts to access election networks this fall. The joint statement says the hacking attempts have been thwarted or quickly mitigated. Separately, the Justice Department announced charges Friday against a Russian national who has been charged with essentially helping to continue the efforts on the part of the Russian government to sow discord within American society, an online effort that continues to this day. And in fact, if you look at this federal complaint, it references online posts about the shooting of church members in Charleston, South Carolina, the shooting at the concert in Las Vegas, the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, police shootings of African-American men, and, as the release here puts it, the personnel and policy decisions of the current U.S. presidential administration. The point I'm trying to make here is that after being called on it in 2016, the Russians continued this effort through 2017 at least, and to this present day, Steve.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy on the weekend roundup as the time ticks until Election Day. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet.
Coming up, Snow White in the Me Too era.
Someday my prince will come.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Elizabeth Warren is defending a DNA test she commissioned, apparently showing some Native American ancestry, as the president continues his attacks on her.
She owes the country an apology.
President Trump didn't back down from his attacks on Warren.
What's the percentage? 1/1,000?
Who released a video made with him in mind.
The president likes to call my mom a liar. What do the facts say?
Warren enlisted a Stanford University DNA researcher for the test.
The facts suggest that you absolutely have a Native American ancestor in your pedigree.
The report suggests Warren has just a trace of Native American heritage, but she first publicly identified as such in the late 1980s.
I've got more Indian blood in me than Pocahontas, and I have none.
The controversy has made Warren an irresistible target for the president.
They call her Pocahontas.
And Pocahontas was up, and she was so angry.
The biographical video,
I used my mama's grit to get through commuter college and law school,
comes after Warren said she would look at running for president, setting her up as an early 2020 opponent for the president.
I'm going to get one of those little kids.
who's already practicing for a matchup.
We will say, I will give you $1 million to your favorite charity, paid for by Trump, if you take the test and it shows you're an Indian.
Warren wants the president to make good on that bet, tweeting he should send the check to charity. But Mr. Trump imposed some conditions.
I'll only do it if I can test her personally. Okay, that will not be something I enjoy doing either.
Warren criticized the president's response in a 28-tweet blast of her own, saying in part that Trump is a bully who scares easily. And we should point out the Cherokee Nation criticized Warren's announcement, saying that her use of a DNA test is inappropriate and is, quote, undermining tribal interests with her continued claims of tribal heritage. Ed O'Keefe, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Speculation is mounting Warren will run as a Democrat for president in 2020. There's growing allegations of voter suppression in the race for governor in Georgia.
The votes are being purged.
In Hinesville, Georgia, it was the talk of the race.
I want them to remember that people died for that right.
They were there to see Democrat Stacey Abrams, who is vying to become the first African-American woman governor in the South.
In 21 days, we're about to make history.
She's running against Republican Brian Kemp, who currently oversees Georgia's election system. Abrams has accused him of dropping more than 1 million voters from the rolls since 2012 and closing polling places in African-American communities.
He is someone who's been tilting the playing field in his direction and in the direction of his party.
The biggest controversy surrounds the state's new exact match law that put the registrations of 53,000 voters, most of them African-Americans, on hold because of discrepancies in the way their names are spelled in state databases. Marsha Appling Nunez got tripped up by a missing letter.
It was unnecessary that I had to go through so many hoops to be here right now, finally, as a registered voter.
On Fox News, Kemp called the issue a smokescreen.
Those folks that are on the pending list, all they have to do is go to the polls, show their photo ID, and they can vote.
He says he's just enforcing the law and that if you want to vote, your name should be recorded accurately.
The challenge is that he knew from experience that this law has a disproportionate effect on certain communities because he was sued for exactly this reason in 2016.
Appling Nunez told us she has now been re-registered despite that missing A, but only after going online more than 40 times. Kemp's campaign declined our request for an interview, but in a statement said that Abrams is trying to create fake outrage to drive voters to the polls. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Washington.
Now to Wisconsin, where authorities are searching for a teen girl who went missing after her parents were found shot dead at their home and ruled homicides. More from correspondent Adriana Diaz in Barron, Wisconsin.
Jamie's out there. We want to find her. And that's our goal.
Investigators ramped up the search for 13-year-old Jamie Claus Tuesday, deploying canines, releasing new photos of the teen, and pleading with the public to come forward.
We're over 200 tips, which is a great source, but we need those tips to come in.
Police received a mostly inaudible 911 call from the Claus family home around 1 a.m. Monday morning. When they arrived, they found James and Denise Claus dead inside and their daughter Jamie gone.
Have you been able to identify the cell phone that the 911 call came from?
We have identified that cell phone.
Whose phone was it?
I'm not able to comment on whose phone that is as part of the investigation.
Miami police said Monday they received a tip Jamie may have been spotted at a gas station riding in a black SUV, but Wisconsin investigators quickly dismissed that lead.
We have no credible information that that was a credible tip.
She is a runner on our cross-country team and a wonderful addition to our Barron Area School District family. A teacher just recently shared this with me about Jamie. Jamie wrote on one of her assignments, in response to the question, what would you do if you were given $1 million? She said, feed the hungry and give the rest to the poor.
People in this small, tight-knit community are rattled. They gather Tuesday night at a vigil to pray for Jamie's safe return.
Investigators say they do not believe Jamie is a suspect in her parents' deaths, but they do believe a gun was involved. But the sheriff wouldn't confirm whether her parents were shot or if that gun's been retrieved. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Barron, Wisconsin.
The Justice Department has sent subpoenas to several Catholic dioceses as it opens an investigation of child sex abuse inside the Catholic Church in Pennsylvania.
The subpoenas follow a state grand jury report that found more than 300 predator priests in Pennsylvania molested more than 1,000 children over seven decades. Marcy Hamilton, the executive director of Child USA, says dominoes are about to fall.
Given the fact we have now about 13 states that their attorneys general are investigating, my assumption is we will see quite a few of the federal prosecutors start to step up.
Catholic dioceses in Pennsylvania who have acknowledged receiving subpoenas say they will cooperate with the Justice Department. Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
Frozen star Kristen Bell is raising concerns about consent in one other Disney film.
Kristen Bell says no to Snow White.
Hi-ho, hi-ho.
In a recent interview with Parents Magazine, the actress shared her concerns over a few of the storylines in the Disney movie, saying she looks at her daughters and says, "Don't you think it's weird that Snow White didn't ask the witch where she got the apple? And don't you think it's weird that the prince kisses Snow White without her permission?" She says she's told them it's not right and to never take food from strangers. But on Twitter,
let it go.
Some are accusing her of being a hypocrite for cashing in a check to star in another Disney movie, Frozen.
Let it go.
Matt Piper, CBS News.
Up next, is your favorite burger place using beef raised with antibiotics?
The problem is, it's being raised using these drugs that are ruining the effectiveness of the antibiotics that we need to fight disease.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
There's one ingredient in burgers not listed on menus at many chains: beef raised with antibiotics. Consumer Reports is out with its list of the chains with antibiotic beef-free burgers. Gene Halloran, the director of Food Policy Initiatives for Consumer Reports, joins us on the Weekend Roundup. Gene, before we get to the list, so what? Why do folks care that there's antibiotics used to raise the beef in their burgers?
Well, we're currently having a crisis of antibiotic resistance. It's too much antibiotics being used on both people and especially animals to make them grow faster and to prevent disease in really crowded factory farming conditions. That's creating superbugs that are making people get sick. We're having 2 million cases a year of people who have diseases that should be cured by antibiotics and are not. And some of those people die.
Yeah, but the beef industry, of course, says this beef is still safe to eat.
The beef itself on any given day is safe to eat. But the problem is, it's being raised using these drugs that are ruining the effectiveness of the antibiotics that we need to fight disease.
All right, so if you're concerned about this, where should you be eating your burgers?
Two up-and-coming chains, Shake Shack and BurgerFi, serve only burgers raised without antibiotics. So those two got A on our scorecard.
And what about the ones that got, say, an F?
Well, most of the rest got an F, and that includes McDonald's, Burger King, most of the big burger chains that you would encounter on a given day.
What's the problem here? Are consumers just not demanding this, or are they just too expensive to sell at chains which serve the mass market?
I don't think they're too expensive. I think they can... part of the problem is that we just need a shift in production practices in the entire industry, and then you'll have the economies of scale that you need.
What about transparency? Do you think that burger chains that still use beef raised with antibiotics should list that on the menu?
That would be very helpful, and consumers would be very interested in that. Consumer Reports has just issued a poll that show that a majority of consumers would prefer to eat burgers that are raised without antibiotics.
Gene Holleran, the Director of Food Policy Initiatives for Consumer Reports. Good talking to you, Gene.
Thank you.
We're learning new secrets from the inside of the kitchen of one of the world's most successful and influential restaurants, Noma. Now the Danish restaurant's out with a new cookbook on fermentation. Correspondent Roxana Saberi visits Noma's new location in Copenhagen to see what's brewing.
In Noma's three kitchens, 55 chefs pour every ounce of energy into each dish. But beyond the bustle is a room running on patience.
How long will you be waiting for this bread to ferment?
About 3 to 4 months.
This is Noma's fermentation lab.
Banana bread.
Where microbes and mold make magic.
Add some salt, pack it into a jar, and wait.
For millennia, people have fermented food to keep it from spoiling, turning milk into yogurt, soybeans into sauce, and cabbage into kimchi. But Chef David Zilber and his team are pushing the boundaries of pickling.
How many new tastes would you say you have discovered here?
Hundreds.
In this fermentation chamber, it is hot, about 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and it smells rich and funky. Some of the things they are fermenting in here are clams, garlic, and stale bread.
More than 100 of their successful experiments make up a new book, The Noma Guide to Fermentation.
Why don't I give you a little taste of this?
Recipes range from simply salting and sealing plums in a bag.
Add it to your salad dressings, pour it on top of your yogurt.
To building a fermentation chamber with racks and a heater.
It's probably not something I would do at home.
Possibly not, but it's easier than you think. We try and ease people in through the levels of difficulty. There's everything from fresh fruit to salt and mason jars, and then into more complicated things, like, let's say, vinegar or misos.
Or grasshoppers.
Or grasshopper garum, yeah.
That's right. Garum, a sauce fermented for months.
Smells like vinegar.
Made from grasshoppers.
Oh, that's actually very good grasshopper.
It is.
Who knew?
Right?
I didn't.
Soured pickled cabbages, pickled coriander. And
of Zilber's countless experiments.
This is a vegetable chorizo.
Only 5% make it onto the menu. The grasshoppers made the cut, mixed with wild greens atop a barley flatbread.
All right. Great, thank you. Not as scrumptious.
Mm-hmm. The fermentation is like, it's building a tiny little bridge between each ingredient.
Head chef Rene Redzepi says fermentation is so fundamental to Noma's gastronomic success, he puts a pickled element in nearly every dish. And now, the secret's out.
You put a lot of work and recipes into this book, and now you're sharing it with other people, including your competitors.
Yeah.
Why?
We believe that if people just did this a little bit, cooking would be so much better.
So if somebody takes this book and create something new, will that help you one day?
Of course. That would be amazing.
After all, he says, fermentation only gets better with time. Roxana Saberi, Copenhagen.
On Wednesday, Canada became the first major world economy to legalize recreational pot.
Thousands of people stood in long lines as adult-use marijuana was rolled out in parts of Canada. Ian Power, a self-proclaimed connoisseur, was the first to purchase pot at this store in Newfoundland.
To be part of history, one, and to finally see the end of the social stigma that surrounds cannabis users.
Under the new law, pot enthusiasts can buy up to 30 grams of pot without facing arrest. Medical marijuana has been legal in Canada since 2001, but government officials say expanding the use of 420 to adults will help regulate the black market.
Adult Canadians who choose to consume cannabis have a safer, lower risk, healthier, and more socially responsible choice. They can choose to do this legally.
Marijuana dealers are concerned that supply may not meet the demand initially, but they expect that to stabilize over the next few weeks.
I chose an indica which it's more of like a mellow, as far as I know, and it's an oil, so I could cook my own edibles with it.
Canadians convicted of possessing up to 30 grams of marijuana will now receive a pardon. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Washington.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, the royal baby bump.
Kensington Palace announced the baby is due in the spring.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Another royal baby is on the way.
The baby news broke as Prince Harry and Meghan Markle arrived in Australia for their first overseas tour together.
That's fabulous. We were very pleased. We knew it was coming soon.
Kensington Palace announced the baby is due in the spring and said royals are delighted to share the happy news with the public. Shortly after Harry and Meghan got engaged last year, the BBC asked them about having children.
Not currently, no. no, of course, you know, I think, you know, one step at a time, and hopefully we'll start a family in the near future.
Harry, I give you this ring.
Ever since their wedding at Windsor Castle in May, pregnancy rumors have swirled. Some speculated the Duchess was hiding her baby bump last Friday when she and Harry returned to St. George's Chapel to watch Princess Eugenie marry her prince.
The family of three will live here on the grounds of Kensington Palace in a two-bedroom cottage. They'll be across the street from Prince William and Kate, who have three children of their own.
They'll just be able to play together and raise their kids and have a wonderful upbringing.
The baby will be seventh in line to the throne and Queen Elizabeth's eighth great-grandchild. Gwen Baumgardner, CBS News, London.
Allegations of harassment in the UK's parliament.
Order.
UK House Speaker John Bercow is known for refereeing ruckus political battles.
If you can't be quiet, get out.
But he could only sit and listen as British lawmakers pressed him to resign over claims Parliament is filled with bullies, gropers, and serial predators.
The report is clear that there needs to be a complete change in leadership at the most senior level, including you, Mr. Speaker.
More than 200 people, most current employees at the House of Commons, revealed a culture of inappropriate touching. Women said politicians tried to kiss them, grabbed their bottoms, and made frequent sexual innuendos.
We have all been shocked and appalled at the reports of bullying, harassment, and sexual harassment in Westminster.
A retired High Court judge wrote the report, which claims abusive behavior was accepted and hidden away.
I was hearing a lot of information about these things that are still going on.
Ethnic minority staff also reported racist abuse, and some women said they felt belittled and were always being asked to buy the coffee or make the tea. The report refers to a godlike status, which made lawmakers believe they were untouchable. Downing Street is said to be pressing for all of the claims to be investigated. Tina Kraus, CBS News, London.
Silicon Valley is remembering a titan of technology, Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, who died of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at 65.
Paul Allen was a visionary in the world of high tech. As co-founder of Microsoft, Allen became one of the richest men on earth, with a net worth once estimated at $40 billion. It was a company that he and Bill Gates envisioned when they were both young teenagers. As Allen told Leslie Stahl in an interview for 60 Minutes in 2011.
He was saying, well, imagine what it's like to run a Fortune 500 company. And I'm thinking, I have no idea. You know, my parents were librarians.
Allen's breakthrough idea in 1974 was to write software for another company's small computer. That led to the home computer revolution and the birth of Microsoft. After a falling out with Gates, Allen left Microsoft at the age of 30, after he was first diagnosed with cancer. Allen wrote that facing his own mortality forced him to reassess his life and follow other dreams.
I've got such a diverse set of interests, movies, aviation, technology.
An avid sports fan, Allen bought both the Portland Trailblazers and his hometown Seattle Seahawks and watched them win their first Super Bowl in 2014. In a statement, Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll says, the world is a better place because of Paul's passion, commitment, and selflessness. In recent years, Allen's company, Vulcan, oversaw his numerous cultural projects in Seattle, including a museum inspired by his passion for music, as well as his philanthropic efforts around the world.
In wildlife conservation, oceans health, climate change, infectious diseases, it was one of the great joys of working with Paul is that breadth and diversity of how many things he wanted to have an impact on and how big he thought about impact.
Correspondent Vladimir Dutier reporting. A rare polio-like illness spreading across the U.S. affecting kids is being called a mystery. More from CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Tara Narula.
Ready, set, go.
Every day, Jenna Schumpert and her 3-year-old son Hunter do exercises to help strengthen his muscles. They use electric stimulation pads to help rejuvenate his damaged nerves.
It's cold. Let's rub it.
Hunter's illness came on suddenly when he was just 15 months old.
Cough, congestion, runny nose, and he had a fever.
Less than 2 weeks later, Hunter was hospitalized on a ventilator.
At this point, he was paralyzed. He could not hold his own head, he couldn't sit, and he couldn't stand.
A neurologist confirmed Hunter had AFM, acute flaccid myelitis. The CDC started tracking cases in 2014 when it counted 120 nationwide. Outbreaks appear to follow in every other year pattern. They jumped in 2016, and there are now 386 confirmed cases.
We don't know what's causing this increase in AFM. It is truly a mystery disease.
While symptoms are similar, health officials have ruled out any connection to polio or West Nile virus.
For some of the previous cases, we've identified one pathogen or another, but we have no unifying diagnosis.
Jenna Schumpert says Hunter has regained some strength since his diagnosis, but his future recovery remains uncertain.
Nobody really knows treatment protocols. They don't know prognosis, and they can't really give parents an answer as to where this is coming from.
Dr. Tara Narula reporting. Smart colonoscopies are promising doctors the ability to identify more polyps.
I have a family history, so...
With colon cancer on both his mother and father's side, John Gifford is diligent about getting a colonoscopy every 5 years. So when his doctor offered a new test using artificial intelligence, John immediately said yes.
This seems like the next obvious evolution.
The AI colonoscopy, developed by doctors at University of California, Irvine, was designed to spot polyps, where all colorectal cancers begin.
Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States.
Dr. William Carnes says the AI colonoscopy can identify up to 20% more abnormalities than a traditional test. The system uses an algorithm, analyzing 98 images a second as it searches for both formed polyps and tissue that could become one. The program shows the results to doctors in real time during the procedure.
That it may actually identify a polyp that we otherwise might have missed.
In John's case, the test did exactly that, detecting two polyps that were beginning to form on his colon.
May not have shown up for another 3, 4, 5 years.
A potentially life-saving find, thanks to a smarter scan. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Orange, California.
Coming up, Bye Bye Birdie.
I'll bet today will be a perfect day
on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
New York got a little less sweet on Friday.
New York City health officials will begin leaning on companies to reduce the amount of sugar in packaged foods to 20%, in drinks to 40%. The National Salt and Sugar Reduction Initiative is an effort endorsed by a coalition of health departments around the country. Goal is to fight diabetes, hypertension, and tooth decay. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
We're learning more about that Banksy painting destroyed after it was auctioned off for nearly $1.5 million.
Remember that Banksy painting that went halfway through a shredder built into its frame just as it was sold at auction? The artist now says it was supposed to have been completely shredded. The woman who made the winning bid of $1.4 million decided she'd have a piece of art history and went ahead with the purchase. In a video, Banksy shows himself building the shredding mechanism and saying in rehearsals it worked every time. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
This weekend, Richard Schlesinger is back with another 48 Hours investigation. Richard, you've got a story about a man who went hunting and never came back, but there's much more to his disappearance. What happened?
There's a lot more. You know, this was a suspicious case from the get-go because the searchers in that area of Florida around Lake Seminole had never had a case where somebody went missing and they didn't find him. Not that deep of a lake. Not, you know, it's generally pretty easy to find folks. So that was peculiar to begin with, but it took 18 years to solve this case, and it took all these really interesting twists and turns. I mean, for a while, most people thought this fellow called Mike Williams, who disappeared, had been eaten by alligators, and that was sort of the prevailing theory for years, and then everything changed, as we like to say in the business.
How much of that change involved his marriage?
From the outside, he had a very happy marriage. He had just become a father about a year and a half before he disappeared. He and his wife, Denise, had met in high school. They were high school sweethearts. You know, everybody looking from the outside in thought, well, this was a great marriage. Obviously, if you follow these cases, many times things are not as they appear, and that is the case in this particular story.
And Mike's mother, though, she took charge of her son's case. Why?
She never believed the alligator theory. She never believed any of the official explanations about what happened to her son. She kept pushing for answers. She wrote, get this, she wrote 1,472 letters that we've been able to find to Florida's governor, to the state law enforcement folks, demanding answers. And this was a fight that she took on pretty much from day one. People thought she was a little nuts. People thought that she was just a grieving mother who couldn't accept reality. But this woman would not give up. And in the end, her persistence was rewarded.
And they eventually found his remains.
They did. I'm going to be a little coy, if you don't mind, Steve. I'm not going to tell you everything about how they came to do it, but they answered the questions about what happened to Mike Williams, and the answers will, even though you may think you know, the answers are still pretty stunning.
Just like every episode of 48 Hours.
Well, we try.
48 Hours correspondent Richard Schlesinger on the Weekend Roundup. You can catch 48 Hours Saturday nights on CBS or catch it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Steve.
The life behind a character generations of Americans have grown up with is moving off Sesame Street to retire.
Sunny day.
I'll bet today will be a perfect day.
He's had one of the longest runs in television history.
I'm a very good bird.
And no, we're not talking about the 8-foot bird, but the voice inside him.
I just go a couple octaves higher. So, hello, how are you? How are you? I go up here. And it sounds cuter without me trying.
Oh, boy.
Since 1969, it's been puppeteer Carol Spinney giving life to Big Bird.
They say, what do you do? I said, well, you've heard of Sesame Street.
I'm Big Bird.
And they said, no.
It was Spinney operating the beak with his right hand and the wings with his left, who changed Big Bird from a goofy adult into America's most innocent six-year-old.
I love to move to the music, love to tap out a beat.
I think we should be playing him like he's a kid, just a really tall kid.
The job has taken him around the world.
This is the Great Wall of China.
And into our living rooms.
Sure. Anyone around my base is it.
Where he also played another memorable character, Oscar the Grouch.
Who is kicking my can?
Both roles will be taken over by understudies. And Spinney, now 84, will be left to look back on his success. He still pinches himself.
Not so it hurts, but because it doesn't have to. It puts a smile on my face.
And ours. As Big Bird might say, toodaloo, Mr. Spinney. Toodaloo. Tony DeCoppel, CBS News,
New York.
Finally this week in the highest honor for an American vet's heroism, 50 years later.
80 years old and looking as though he could still lead Marines into combat, retired Sergeant Major John Canley received the Medal of Honor for his actions in the 1968 Battle of Hue. We'll get to the details in a moment. But here's what you really need to know about what happened.
I can't think of any other way or reason of where I would rather die than with my Marines.
Did you think you were going to die that day?
That never crossed my mind.
Canley was leading his Marines into the teeth of a North Vietnamese ambush on the southern outskirts of Hue.
My troops would follow me to death. So if they are in a position where is that they might die, what am I supposed to do?
According to statements submitted by his men, what he did was repeatedly expose himself to enemy fire to pull wounded Marines to safety.
They're still alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to get to them.
Eyewitnesses saw him pull at least 10 wounded Marines to safety, charge a machine gun that had them pinned down, and deliberately expose himself to fire in order to pinpoint enemy locations. But he hates being singled out from all the other Marines who did their time in Nam.
When you look at what type of award or what type of recognition they receive, it's nothing. That really offends me.
The Marines who followed him into battle, Canley says, were the source of his courage.
Knowing that they was 100% behind me, fear never existed.
David Martin, CBS News, Washington.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.